Monster Professor.
Welcome to The Monster Professor, a show in which we discuss and explore monsters in literature, myth, film, games, folklore, culture, and beyond. I'm your host, Josh Woods, author, editor, professor, and monster expert. We are now past 20 episodes on The Monster Professor, and so by now you've probably noticed a pattern. We talk about monsters one episode after another. We'll focus on normally a specific type of monster, and we'll talk about essentially how cool they are. But for today's episode, I want to talk about how do you kill it?
Bleeds, we can kill it.
So for this episode, I want to go through as many monsters as I can in a reasonable amount of time and discuss what you do to kill or defeat a monster like that. If you're up against them, or you're hunting them, or you're writing a story about them, you're making a movie about these kinds of things, like what kinds of details would you use in battle against these things? And so it'll be a montage of monsters in this episode, and I have no doubt that I'll run out of time way before I actually get through all of them I just want to talk about in this one. So there will probably be a how do you kill it part two, how do you kill it part three, and so on and so forth. One of the inspirations for today is I very often get questions from all sorts of people, normally writers, but all sorts of people curious about how, what the details are about killing this type of monster, that type of monster. But another and more recent, more specific inspiration for this show is I just recently finished compiling, I've completed now, my vampire hunting kit. It's a beautiful piece of work altogether. So ever so brief, I'll try to be as brief about it as I can. At an antique mall, I found this priest's homesick kit. It's this from 1912, manufactured in St. Louis. It appears to be St. Louis. It's this old wooden box and that priests would use to visit the sick and perform mass with them since they couldn't come to the church. In this box, it opens up at the top, it folds down in the front to create this mini little sanctuary area in the box with this purple velvet against the background, and it had some holy candles in it from 1912. A few other items like that came with it, and I thought, when I saw this thing, I thought, oh my god, I know exactly what this needs to be. This looks like something Van Helsing would have carried in Bram Stoker's Dracula, and I just need to fill this thing to the brim with everything I need to defeat, hunt down vampires. Okay, and so in it, so I tried to make sure everything I got was also antique, you know, very roughly 100 years old. Little bottles, the containers for these things. And so here's what's in it, and it's all legit. There's no faking any of these. So I've got garlic, I've got legit holy water, I've got salt. I'm pretty sure I got kosher salt on that one. Now I have to go back and check that. Let's see, mustard seed. I've got a mirror, a wooden stake and a steel stake, a really cool looking mallet to go along with it. Like I said, I have holy candles in there. I've got silver ring. I can't get a hold of silver bullets, by the way. Quick tangent on those things. It's really hard to find. an actual workable silver bullet to buy retail. Like, people will sell non-functional silver bullets, or there are some loads that have like a silver content to them, but not very much, not one that I would trust going in against a werewolf. And so it's really hard to find. If somebody knows exactly where to find actual silver bullets, functional bullets, maybe let me know. For all I know, there's probably federal laws against that, because they don't want you protecting yourself against werewolves. So maybe that's why you can't find them. What else is in this kit? A crucifix, have an antique iron horseshoe, a little bit of crystal, and a few other items. And I think now, since the thing is full, and since it has all the items I needed at minimum, I'm calling this puppy complete. And so I want to go through a little bit about what these kinds of items do against a vampire, and maybe what else I would want if I were going up against one. But I think if I can get to them today, I want to talk about how you kill ghosts, how you bust ghosts according to various traditions. And then what kinds of, there's one type of ghost, according to a lot of different cultures and magical traditions, that you always want to stay away from. Even don't even worry about trying to hunt it. You're gonna go down. Zombies, let's see, witches and warlocks, we should talk about werewolves, fairy, fae creatures, maybe even a dragon, different type of spirits. That's already, now that I'm hearing myself go through these, I don't think I'm going to get through them all this episode. So where should I begin on this? I guess I should begin with the vampire slaying kit. Well, I take that back. Actually, maybe I should address this concern that people sometimes have. They haven't had it recently, but sometimes people are concerned. Wait, are you talking about this for real? Like, Josh, are you seriously like going into the sewers of a big city with your kit and seeking out actual vampires? Do you think ghosts are real? Do you think werewolves are real? I remember somebody getting furious with me. I was trying to remember. Oh, I do remember who it is, but I probably shouldn't drop names. This when I was in college, late one night after some type of event, some guy was like, "Woods, you got to tell me, do you really believe in demons?" I'm like, "Oh man, demons are so cool." I'm like, "Did you know that there's this demon who is essentially an old man who rides an alligator, and he has the sack that he collects children in?" And he's like, "You're not listening to me. I'm saying, do you believe in demons? Do you really believe it?" I'm like, "Oh, and you know what else?" And I found this, this booklet for how you perform exorcisms. He's like, "Do you or do you not?" Like, what is it? It's none of my business whether I believe in them or not, right? If I think they're awesome, isn't that enough? Whether I believe in them or not, how's that going to make them exist or not exist? It's none of my business. But isn't it? Wouldn't everyone feel a little bit better knowing that they have a fully stocked vampire kit in their home than if they didn't? Then you don't have to worry about whether they're real or not, because you're ready for them either way. So there's my evasive and obnoxious answer to, do I believe in these things? I love them, and that's enough for me. Okay, so let's see, where should I jump in? On my kit, I think the one that throws people off the most might be the mustard seed. It was when I was a kid and looking into monster folklore, that's one of the first details that came through to me that kind of surprised me. That, you know, you didn't necessarily see in Dracula movies, or I don't remember reading that anywhere in Bram Stoker's Dracula. So it was essentially, to me, kind of this glimpse of how rich and diverse the folklore of vampires and various monsters could be. And so here, mustard seed is used against vampires because when you scatter mustard seeds across any surface, say, you know, the floor or your roof, vampires can't help but stop and count every single one of them. It's this compulsion that they have, according to some of the tales. And so it's a bit like the chafes you might release in the middle of a dogfight with jets or something. It's a thing to throw them off. If a vampire is after you or you're worried that they're going to get into your house, throw mustard seed around, and as they come by, they'll have to stop and count every mustard seed. You have enough of them out there, you might keep them busy till daylight, or if not, at least you'll buy yourself some time. A wooden stake or a steel stake through the, you know, I think it's pretty well known that one thing you have to do to a vampire is drive a stake through his or her heart. Does it have to be a wooden stake? Nope, doesn't have to be a wooden stake, according to Bram Stoker. And I think that's one thing in, Francis Ford Coppola's movie that he proudly displayed on screen in that wonderful scene when they're killing Lucy in her tomb. Oh, it's so unnervingly good. And they drive this huge steel or iron stake through her chest, like an oversized railroad spike. And what you're doing in the vampire stories when you're driving a stake through their chest is essentially you're pinning them down into their grave so they can't keep rising back up. And so that's where that started. And really, that's not enough to kill a vampire. That just holds them down and keeps them from getting back up and feasting every night on the blood of the living. What you also have to do is behead them. And one thing Van Helsing liked to do is fill the mouth with holy wafers or something consecrated like that. And after the head is removed, and then you want to, if you can, also burn the body and scatter the ashes, because you just don't know how resilient they are piecing themselves back together and rising back up. So actually, what I would need in this kit to call it really complete would be some way to behead somebody. And so I guess I could throw, I mean, I would need a, it would be easier if I had a bigger blade on that, like a machete. I have a machete, but you can't fit it in there. I guess a knife, and I don't have holy wafers. Damn it. I need to get some. Okay, I'm realizing now my vampire kit's not complete, but I'm just about out of space in it. Gotta get holy wafers and a knife. What else in here might be interesting to people? Garlic repulses them, and that's probably commonly known. The mirror in there, it can help you detect a vampire, perhaps, and perhaps they don't even like the thing. My wooden stake, by the way, is this beautiful letter opener, this really, really hardcore sharp letter opener, and I just harden the edges on it a little bit with flame. If you want to harden wood, you dry it out a little bit and char it a little bit with flame, and then the steel stake is really sharp, and that could punch right in between ribs and get right to the heart of a vampire. I think that's a pretty good rundown on the questions that you might have from my kit. Salt. I didn't talk about salt. You'll find salt showing up as a way to fight off or ward off monsters or evil spirits throughout all sorts of cultures, not just European cultures. As far as I know, even indigenous American, North and South cultures, African cultures, Asian cultures, I don't know about Aboriginal cultures or Southeast Pacific cultures, but it wouldn't surprise me. Well, in Japan, when you see the sumo wrestlers, when you watch sumo wrestling as much as I do, I don't know how many people watch sumo wrestling, but I do sometimes. It's wonderful. And before the match starts, very often, part of the ceremony is that each wrestler scatters salt across the ring or the performance area. And that's to ward away the bad spirits or the evil spirits. And that's a holdover from Shinto, the indigenous, more naturalistic or pantheistic religion of Japan before Buddhism was imported and Christianity was imported. Let's see. Have I covered? Oh, another thing in my vampire hunting kit that's not necessarily for vampires. The silver ring I have in there, in case you've got a werewolf problem. That's the closest I have to some expendable silver that I could. That I could use against somebody. I don't ask me exactly what I plan to do with that silver ring if I met a werewolf, because right now it looks like it could do little more than just put it on my a finger and then just punch the thing. I don't think that's very useful. I'm a decent boxer, I'll have you know. And I also happen, as a boxing trophy, to own the only pair of boxing gloves signed by the legendary author herself, Joyce Carol Oates. The only existent pair in the world ever, as far as I can tell. And yet, even if I trained seriously for many years, not so sure I could outbox a werewolf. Okay, so what in the world is up with the horseshoe in my vampire slaying kit? That is antique iron, and it's not hot, so it's essentially cold iron, and that's for fairy or fey creatures. For instance, the changeling. Have you ever heard about changelings? If you're a parent, you should be worried about them. The changelings are these fey creatures that will steal an infant of yours and replace it with one of their own shapeshifters. And the infant will, and that shapeshifter will act like the infant that they stole. The changeling will hang around in the guise of your stolen infant in the crib for as long as it takes for them to scurry away with the child, to raise it long enough that there's no hope of that child returning back to you, even if you were able to go out and find it. And the fairy creatures or the fae creatures do this because they can no longer, they've lost so much power in the world, they can no longer propagate or reproduce on their own. So that, like old myths of gypsies, they used to have to, or these fairy creatures have to steal children to keep their numbers going. And so the changeling that's in the guise of your infant will stay in there for just long enough before it can scurry away. But they're also so mischievous. They're so mischievous that they can't help themselves but torment you and maybe even try to drive you mad. And so the old stories go that the changeling in the crib, once the father goes away to do some errand or to work, the little like 6 month old infant will stand up in the crib and just say horrible things to the mother and drive her mad, and she's horrified by this thing. And then the father gets back and she's horrified and she's telling what happens, but the changeling's just acting like a little 6 month old again. And then they think the mother is mad, and fae creatures get a kick out of this. They're wicked little things. Sometimes the bad ones are. And so how do you know if you're dealing with a changeling or not, since they like playing around and lying and messing with your head? You press cold iron to them. If it burns them, that's how you know. And so, and there are also folk tales about cold iron being used against devils, or even demons, and especially in the shape of a horseshoe. along with salt, there are a lot of other, and I think garlic falls into this category too. There are a lot of anti-monster recipes or items that are essentially natural remedies against illness and infection. These kind of, like, you know, salt water will help against, you know, help you get through like an infected throat, for instance, or salt helps clean out wounds, for instance, and this kind of thing. And so a lot of medicinal herbs you'll find both on lists of how to get over infections or how to cleanse or clean something, antibacterial, and also anti-monster, anti-bad spirit. And so it's probably not too much of a leap to just guess that maybe the origins of some of these methods and items for warding off or fighting monsters had some connection to warding off and fighting disease, for instance. In fact, a lot of monsters are kind of synonymous with disease. Vampires in most folklore are synonymous with plague bringers, or maybe they're the reason why people get sick. The same thing with a lot of demons and ghosts and stuff too, and witches for that matter. Let's shift to witches. How do you kill them? Well, there is no clear agreement on this, and it's one reason that in my own novel, when I have the Witchfinders Union going out after witches, they're fully stocked with all sorts of possible ammunition, depending on not only which type of witch they're up against, but what type of witch's creature or servant they're going to have to confront before they can get to the witch herself. And so my characters have these bandoliers of what are essentially these exotic rounds, these rounds for standard firearms, but filled with exotic materials rather than just lead or steel shot. I was quite serious, by the way, about making sure that whatever my characters carried into the field to go up against witches and monsters, that it would be viable. I didn't want to just say, oh, you have, you know, holy water bullets and you shoot them out of a machine gun or something like that. There's no way water would survive through the end of a muzzle if you just shot it as a bullet. It doesn't work like that. I wanted these things to really work. So one of the things I did, and it ended up being the most helpful out of all, is I got in touch with and begged the help of a friend of mine who is a sheriff's deputy, and he's trained SWAT teams before, so he's an instructor. He's one hell of an instructor. He even trained me on some tactical handgun work, especially in indoor scenarios, and that really helped me sort out my the details of my Witchfinder characters, who are essentially kind of like supernatural SWAT team members as well. And through some research and extra work that he did, and kind of my guidance on what I had envisioned, he helped me realize, or at least this was his solution, that you could take exotic materials and wrap them up in some type of material that would hold together through the initial blast out of the muzzle of the firearm, and you needed it to hold up through the entire trajectory until it hit its target. But then that material had to be weak enough that it would dissipate then and deliver the exotic material. And it was tough to find one that would do that. We were both thinking shotgun rounds, like 12-gauge shotgun rounds. That gives you a lot of diameter, a lot of space to work with if you loaded that up with something. But it was tough to figure out what could survive that would be strong enough to hold together but weak enough to break apart as soon as it hit. Until he realized, or he discovered, pantyhose works perfectly. It's that perfect mixture of tough and will finally bust apart upon impact. And so you can make little pouches out of pantyhose, and in these pouches you could have them full of, say, ash splinters if you want to shoot wood into a vampire's heart, right? Or you could have it filled with leaves of wolf's bane, or you could have it filled with all sorts of different, any kind, and mustard seed rounds, for instance. And so you could have them full of all these kind of things. And so my witch finders have bandoliers of all of these exotic rounds for whatever kind of scenario you want them, or they would need to be put up against. And of course, in the back of my novel, I have essentially their inventory, everything they were carrying at the beginning of the night of the Black Palace. And so if you're interested in technical details about how you go after witches and werewolves and vampires, check out The Black Palace, among other books. Amazon.com, of course, for that one. So what else about witches or warlocks, these kinds of things? Well, there's one old folktale saying that if you kill a witch, she's just going to find a way to rise back up, or the devils are going to bring her back, unless you bury her under a tree. And I don't exactly know how they thought of doing that. I assume like tunneling down and then horizontally and getting the body in under there, or maybe just like pretty close to under a tree. Perhaps even, maybe they transplanted a sapling over top of a grave where they had buried an executed witch. But if you bury her under a tree, the tree's roots will keep her down in ways that nothing else can. And in that way, you know, I kind of envision for my characters botanical rounds, various types of wood or plant rounds worked on many standard witches. Or even other herbs like arbutus, burned very often in incense to clear away evil spirits, and also I think has antibacterial properties as well, to go back to that idea. Another thing that works well against witches, this shows up especially in Appalachian folklore against witches, is if you have something of the witch, a picture is the best, but it could be some other item. If you drive a nail into it, they feel the effect of that sympathetic magic, right? So if you drive a nail into where the heart would be in the picture of this witch, then she will feel the effect of essentially a nail going through her heart. But you don't want to do it all at once, because they'll catch on to what's going on, or they'll have some protection against it. It's kind of like the shields in Dune, right? The slow blade is the one that pierces through the force field. And so you have to drive the nail slowly, like a little bit, just tap it a little bit every day into the picture. And then eventually when you bury the head of the nail into the picture, into the tree you have it posted against, then the witch will finally die. Or if you find her footprints in the dirt, you could drive day by day a nail into the footprints and cripple her. And those kinds of things. So if you have any item belonging to the witch, you can use that against her. But if the witch is worth her salt at all, then she already has items of you, and she's already working hard against you. So you're gonna lose, unless you call the Witchfinders Union. Maybe let's get into the most complex of all of the monster killing categories, and that would be busting ghosts. What do you do with ghosts? Now, many of us have these kind of nuclear proton packs that the Ghostbusters had. So what do we have? Well, lots of cultures and lots of religions have had different ways of dealing with ghost-like things. And one important item to note is that you need to know what kind of supernatural creature you're dealing with. Are you actually dealing with the ghost of someone who died? Or are you dealing with an elemental or fae creature that has kind of a life of its own, but no direct connection to having once lived as a human being? A little bit more like the wild animals of the supernatural world. Or are you dealing with a demon in the disguising itself as a ghost, or just a demon altogether? And so the short answer for the last two is, if you're dealing with a fae creature, just leave it alone or try to scare it off. They don't tend to want to have anything to do with humans, unless, except for the changeling ones. But then the difficult part is just identifying it, letting it know you're onto its tricks. And then once you do, they tend to just run away. They want to be left alone. Maybe like a bobcat. Like, what do you do if you have a bobcat in your yard, in your backyard, who's angry at you? Leave it alone and it'll go away. Or just take a gun to it if that's not an option. And I think the same might work with fae creatures. Iron would work there in the way that we imagine silver to work against werewolves. Against demons, it's best to call a professional, and a professional exorcist, so the people who are really into this and the people who take these kinds of supernatural threats quite seriously. And one day on the Monster Professor, I hope to interview a priest who has performed actual official exorcisms, because I would love to pick his brain on exactly how that experience was and everything they think about it. But overall, they say if you're dealing with a ghost, maybe you can handle it. A demon, don't. Although there is one type of ghost don't mess with. What do you do with ghosts? Well, they say there are a bunch of different kinds. There are these kinds of vengeful, angry ghosts. There are ghosts that want something completed. Or there are also these things they call these various etheric creatures that they might even call etheric larvae, which are in the spirit world or the supernatural world. They like recycle the cast off etheric shells of spirits that have moved on from this world to the other and left behind what is essentially kind of ghost waste. And you have these etheric larvae that come in, and you can't see them in normal life, but they latch on and eat up these things and move on. But sometimes they might latch on to things that they shouldn't, and they might latch on to you or latch on to your house and start eating away at things. And then what happens in your normal physical world is that you'll feel depressed, you'll start to get ill, things will just seem gloomy and bad, and you'll feel like your energy's dropping. And so if these bouts of depression that you might go through, or bouts of illness, it might be because you have these mindless kind of ghosts munching away on what they shouldn't be. They should be out recycling dead husks of etheric energy, not living ones. And so you'd want to dissipate those or run those off. And the way to do that, and this also works for ghosts holding on out of anger, the way to do that is essentially to cleanse the area is the number one answer for a lot of these things, because a lot of the ghosts will hold on to an area more than anything else. There are various ways to cleanse the area, actually. So any type of material, especially any sort of natural home remedy for fighting infection, or that you would use to clean something, probably works for ghosts. And all the lists that I've seen of various, say, magicians or spiritualists, or or even Druid John Michael Greer has good lists of his own about ways to fight or cleanse these areas. Typically, it comes down to salt, even vinegar, leaving vinegar out. The fumes kind of dissipate in these ghostly things. Any sort of incense that has like any sort of smoke that has kind of antibacterial properties, that'll all work. Oh, ancient Greeks used to on the night or the nights when the dead would rise and wander gibbering through the street. The sheeted dead would gibber through the streets. As Shakespeare says in Hamlet, or as Shakespeare has his character say in Hamlet, that the ancient Greeks would walk through the house making a sign with their hands. And the sign, as described in the old text, are essentially the heavy metal kind of devil horn sign, like or the rock on sign. And so if you go through your house with it, making that sign with your hand, you're warding away the spirits. But also they would take a handful of beans, dried beans, I believe, and toss them behind them over their shoulder in the way that you might toss mustard seed for vampires. And so Greek beans can also help get rid of ghosts. And of course, my witch finders have shotgun rounds loaded with Greek beans ready to shoot ghosts. An addition of mine that I didn't necessarily read anywhere, but it made perfect sense to me, was mirror shards. So you take a mirror and bust that up, and you load that into a round. You shoot that towards, say, a vampire or toward a ghost, especially toward ghosts. You could dissipate them. Because back to what I didn't make up, back to the actual lore on these kinds of things, one way to get more specific in dissipating a spirit or ghost like this, rather than cleansing the area, is to take a sharp, shiny object and move it through the area where the ghost or the spirit or the etheric larva would be, and that will dissipate them, break them up, and then they'll float away, right? And you're fine. A sharp shiny object like a needle will even work, and that keeps the ether or their etheric bodies from holding together if you wave it through the area. And so how about this for a recipe? This one comes from John Michael Greer. He says, you can make an amulet of protection. Use red flannel. So make two red flannel circles and begin to sew the edges up to create kind of like a pouch. In the pouch, you put salt and then one of these sharp, bright pieces of steel, and a needle would work just fine. So salt and a needle in the middle of this pouch. You can also say so, and then you sew it up, and so it's contained all in one little packet. And this little, you have a little amulet. You can put a string on it, wear it around your neck, and so wherever you go, you're breaking up ghosts. And you can also stitch, say, a protective symbol. There are various types of symbols you could stitch into that, or you could wave it in certain patterns, certain star or cross patterns to help out as well. One such amulet created and given away from the Woods household, I hear, is still in effect at an undisclosed location of somebody out there fighting evil on the ground level, and that makes me quite happy to hear. Let's see, so the ghost thing gets really complicated. You can also, I'm getting close to time. Maybe I should warn you about the types of ghosts not to mess with. I already told you, if you're dealing with a demon, we didn't really discuss necessarily how to tell the difference. That matters, but just about how you kill it, you gotta get an exorcist to drive the thing out. And if you're like, well, I don't have a choice, I don't have a professional on hand, but I have a demon, what do I do? Well, try not to listen to it as much as possible and find out its exact name. Now, you can find an ancient occult catalog of all important demon names, or all the names of demons that have been recorded so far throughout history. It's available online. It was much older than the internet, but it's called the Lesser Key of Solomon. The Lesser Key of Solomon. It's one of these occult texts attributed to the writings of Solomon, who controlled demons to help him build the temple in Jerusalem. That's a different story altogether. One we'll discuss in an upcoming episode eventually on Jewish folklore and the monsters of Jewish folklore. But this Lesser Key of Solomon, I think the best place to go would be a website called the Twilight Grotto. I don't know who it is that keeps this thing together, but they are like legitimate old, most of them Renaissance era texts, scanned and a lot of them translated, though not all of them. Knowing Latin helps quite a bit on this episode, on that website. This collection of all these occult texts, a lot of them from the Renaissance, and you can find it there, Lesser Key of Solomon. And the Renaissance, by the way, was a Renaissance not only of classic Greek architecture and art and sensibilities and values, but also especially the occult as the what would otherwise have been the standard church kind of waned in influence, and various occult kind of interests were rising back up. So you'd see a lot of these texts come out at about that time. And so you could go through that and read the descriptions and see if you can, or just trial and error and find out if you can find that demon's name. And once you do, you have some power over it. It also tells you how to build these containment circles for various types of demons, but I think generally the best idea is to not mess with them because they're dangerous and malicious, much more so than, say, other types of monsters. But back to the ghosts, they say, you know, that ghosts of drowned people or drowning victims linger in the water there, and they are not so easily dissipated. And in fact, they tend to be extra vindictive and vicious to people who have had nothing to do with whatever their conditions were of dying. And so drowning ghosts, if you wade or swim out in those haunted waters, they will pull your ankles and drag you down and make you company with them. You too will be another drowned ghost, and they will continue to do this. So if you're swimming in an area that you think people might have drowned in, and their ghosts might have hung around and be angry or vindictive, then they say stay away from that. And I think that shows up in all sorts of cultures. I think we discussed even on a previous episode, during a Chinese festival, you are not to go swimming in the water because the ghosts will drag you down. But it definitely exists in American folklore and European as well. Don't get around haunted water. You can't get rid of the ghosts. They're going to get you before you get them. And so, unless you're a professional, and maybe that's another time to call in a professional, because professionals can handle it. Amateurs can handle most ghosts, but not demons and not drowned ghosts. Let's see. We didn't talk about zombies, dragons, all sorts. There are all sorts of other ones. I think this means that officially, eventually, we're going to have to talk about How Do You Kill It Part 2. And so if you have some monsters you're fighting or dealing with, or you have some questions about how do you get rid of or fight or defeat this type of monster or that type of monster, shoot me an email, joshwoodsauthor@gmail.com, or check out or send me a message through the contact form on my website, joshwoodsauthor.com. Again, you can find my books on amazon.com. The Black Palace is my novel. And if you made it this far, congratulations, you survived another episode. And so I look forward to talking to you next time on The Monster Professor.